Hello and welcome. On today's episode, we are going to be breaking out the mailbag. And I mean it. We're doubling down on it. Your questions, our answers, every Friday here at Choose FI. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup. All right, guys. Excited to dive into the mailbag this week and help me with this. I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan. I am doing quite well. Yeah, I mean, it feels amazing to get back to a traditional Friday Roundup. I could definitely get used to this.
When are you going
to
come join me back in the studio, man? It's kind of getting lonely over here. I got the lights set up. You know, it's totally dialed in and you're just hanging out at home.
I am practicing a very, very safe social distancing. So we will see. But yeah, I do long for the days that we can get back to it for sure.
You know, it's coming. At some point, it's coming. I don't know exactly when, but I feel optimistic that winter has come and spring is coming, just delayed by 3 or 4 months. So anyways, I know what we decided we wanted to do this week is really double down on doing some mailbag questions. I know it's something that we enjoy. And over the last, the gauntlet that's been the last month or so, we really haven't gotten a chance to do any. So we're going to dedicate this whole episode for that, I think. And to help us with this, MK, you're here as well. How you doing?
Great. Great to be here.
So where do we want to start? Do we want to start with reactions to Big Earn's episode on Have We Seen the Bottom?
Yeah, Jonathan, let's talk about Big Earn. I mean, I know you mentioned the word optimism about 30 seconds ago, and I think that was my big takeaway from this episode with Carson is how shockingly optimistic he was. I was really taken aback, frankly. I know I kind of set up that apocalyptic scenario at the beginning, which, you know, frankly, is not all that apocalyptic. You know, you hear bad news, and when you hear the steady, steady drumbeat of it, your mind can start spiraling, right? And, you know, also, not for nothing, but Big Earn is usually the one that maybe tries to tamp down enthusiasm, maybe when it comes to safe withdrawal rates, right? He's always the guy who's saying like, all right, the 4%, that's a rule of thumb, but I can almost guarantee you 3.25% or whatever he says. And, you know, he's certainly not a killjoy by any means, but I was just really blown away with how optimistic he was for the future of our economy, obviously with some caveats, right? I mean, he talked about this death spiral. And I mean, we can all see that theoretically, right? If this continues for another 2, 4, 6+ months, it's not hard to envision. But I mean, guys, that was my massive takeaway was, maybe if Earn is excited about this and optimistic, maybe I need to start thinking this way much more regularly.
Awesome. Well, I don't think it hurts to embrace a little optimism in your life, but I mean, even with that, I think what we see with Earn is that he's consistent, right? He's looking at the data and he's looking at the data, not over just over the last 10 years, but over, you know, since we've really been measuring the market with any capacity, he looks at all that data and he comes up with the numbers and he's like, guys, you know, with all the variables that you're incorporating in your safe withdrawal rates and your timeline, your expected time horizon for needing this money, I think you need to be a little bit less optimistic and a little bit more grounded in reality, and you need to use this more conservative number if you want to give yourself the best chance at a stable, non-volatile drawdown. Having said that, that being grounded in that data also goes the other way, because, you know, it's so easy to go to that, as you said, that apocalyptic place where I need to get beans in the bunker, you know, invest in digital currency and just be ready for the end because you can't trust the banks anymore. It's all over. And Earn says, well, that same data, that same time horizon encompasses really bad viruses, really bad pandemics, really bad wars, global wars, to the degree that in this current era, we frankly can't even imagine, you know? And when you have the benefit of looking at the data over that extended time horizon, you can see it's probably going to be not as good as you think it's going to be. It's also going to be not as bad as you think it's going to be. Somewhere in the middle. And when we're coming up with our plan, we want to plan around somewhere in the middle, because that encompasses the vast majority of possible outcomes. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Earn's. I place a lot of weight in his opinion. And I think that when you look back at his opinion, you know, how does it age? It ages pretty well. It doesn't mean that you don't adapt or change when you get new information. Like, you can't have this one opinion and you will not ever deviate from it, no matter what new information comes across. But it's important for all of us to, as we get new information, as it makes sense, to make calculated changes, but not do so from a place of fear or panic, and not do so from a place of unbridled enthusiasm either. Rather, this is part of our plan.
Yeah, and I think going back to what you said a minute ago, the hallmark of an intelligent person is taking in new information and synthesizing it and determining how to move forward, right? And potentially changing your mind if the facts on the ground have changed. And I think that is critical. And, you know, obviously you were joking there with the apocalyptic, the bunkers and the, hey, let's put all of our money in crypto or something insane like that. But, you know, I think when you look at the economy, you see potentially unprecedented things. Like I was talking to a buddy yesterday who runs a chiropractic office, and he's like, I never envisioned in any of our disaster planning. And that's actually what I want to come back to is disaster planning. But I never envisioned money going down to zero, right? Like what kind of business in any of their disaster planning? I know we did that at Chooseify and, you know, for months because we practiced the tenets of financial independence.
I was there at those disaster planning meetings that we had. And let me tell you what, this exceeded our expectations as well.
It certainly did. And you are the unbridled optimist in our leadership team here, certainly. But, you know, I think what this comes back to is financial independence and the importance of it, right? I think that to me is what gets me so worried. And again, why I'm so happy hearing Carson's optimism, because, you know, when I think about society, I think about hundreds of millions of people who have no money saved up. I think about businesses, even quote unquote successful ones, who, when you read about them, they have 6 weeks of cash on hand, you know, massive businesses. I read about McDonald's, literally McDonald's having 6 weeks of cash on hand. Like, because again, who could envision it going down to zero, right? Like nobody planned for this, or effectively zero, right? So I think that's where my mind went with a lot of this stuff. But I think Carson's contention is if we can get back to some semblance of normal before this death spiral takes hold, because again, he wasn't being a absurd optimist. He was saying clearly at some point there will be a death spiral. But if we can get back before that happens, then we had a robust economy before. People are looking. I mean, people are just craving. I see this in my own life, like to get out, right? I mean, when things get back to normal, when it's safe to get back to normal, and of course, that is what we're, you know, very, very important that we're saying when it's safe to get back to normal, the floodgates are going to open. I mean, we're going to go to restaurants, we're going to go to bars, we're going to support our local businesses. And I think people are going to do that en masse across the country and across the world. So there is that pent up demand. Clearly, there was a robust economy beforehand. You know, I think many businesses are going to come back because what's the alternative, right? Like, are landlords just going to throw out thriving businesses because they potentially couldn't pay a month's of rent? Like, no, of course not. That it's just unrealistic. So I think in my heart of hearts, there is a very, very plausible scenario where when we get back to some semblance of normal, things are going to thrive. And I have to say, you know, Jonathan, listening to you, who I thought you were a crazy optimist, and listening to Earn, like it makes me feel better. It frankly does.
I totally understand that you thought I was a crazy optimist, and in a vacuum by myself, it was just that optimism. But I mean, the data is increasingly supporting the fact that we can bring this thing back. It's going to come back together. It is not, and I want to say this clearly, it is not to say that coronavirus is not a very scary, dangerous virus. We have good friends that got it. I do not know anyone personally who died from it. I assure all of us probably know someone who knows someone who died from this. This is a really bad, dangerous bug. It also was not the zombie apocalypse. It can be both of those. It can be both of those. And it's not to say at some point, hey, the zombie apocalypse, that's a pretty scary thing. It's probably going to happen at some point. Not today. Didn't happen this year. So since we're inside the middle, right? What we find now, and we're kind of at this intersection point, this fork in the road, COVID-19 and the economy are going in two different directions from here on out. Like they're kind of separated from each other. Now, neither of those directions is straight back up. I just want to point that out. It's not to say that either of these, COVID's not going to just disappear. It may never disappear. It might disappear. We don't know, but it's not going to disappear in anytime soon. There continue to be new cases, new deaths, but the economy and COVID, their fortunes are increasingly separating from each other, not entirely, but separating from each other, because the decisions that we make as a society, as a country, as an economy, they need to be grounded in reality based on new information that we're getting. We need to proceed with caution. But if we do it right, as Earn was saying, we decided to go to this pause together. We voluntarily accepted the pause to make sure that our healthcare systems did not get overwhelmed. And thankfully, we have seen that that has not been the case, right? There has been shortages of protective equipment for those on the front lines. That is super sad and it's scary. There has been hotspots, really bad hotspots in areas, but we haven't seen the overflow happen into the other areas, thankfully. A lot of those that have been set up have not had to be used. And we're starting to see data come out that this thing is now trending steady or declining, even in some of the worst areas. We're not at the finish line here. This isn't over. We're going to be talking about this for months and months. But what it means is the decisions that we make as we figure out how to strategically reopen have to be done very intentionally, very smartly. And the reason for optimism here is that because as a country, we voluntarily hit pause, that means that we can also voluntarily unhit pause. And Earn was saying that when you look at the data, those quick declines, because we opted into this, means that we can also opt out very quickly as well. That's room for a lot of encouragement. And now, Brad, as you were talking about earlier, we know the industries that are most affected, and they don't have to be all industries. Not every industry has to be crushed by this. There's a lot of room for optimism here. Not unbridled optimism, not stupid, naive, uninformed optimism, but optimism based on the data. And it's just figuring out how do we proceed in a very smart, intentional, and informed way. All right, MK. In fact, actually, let me set this up real quick. We're going to be doing mailbags. Most of the questions we do from the mailbag actually come because you have emailed us your questions. If you want your question to be included on a Mailbag Friday, just send us an email to feedback@choosefi.com, and we'll be tackling your questions on our Friday episode. So MK, our first question, what do you got for us?
Okay, this message comes from Jeremy. Hi, guys. Thanks for all that you do for the FI community. Quick question. Jonathan, in a recent pod, you mentioned paying off your mortgage early is a current focus for you. I'm curious as to your strategy for doing so. Are you making additional payments each month? Are you putting that extra money in the market to earn a bigger return, similar to the strategy used by one of your guests, Ariel? I think I've run every possible scenario on how to put my extra funds to work, and I'm still confused on the best option. Any insight on your chosen path would be helpful. Thanks.
Interesting. I actually remember saying very intentionally I was not paying off my mortgage early. And that's actually predicated on a few different episodes that we've done. Actually, timely enough, with Big Earn, we talked about sequence of return risk and how, like, if you're throwing all of your extra money at your house until your house is paid off, and then you're starting to invest after that, which it's not necessarily binary. You could do a little bit of both, right? Split the difference. But if you were to throw every extra penny you had at your house and then wait to start investing after the line, now your timeline for investing is kind of compressed. You're buying all of those shares at a more compressed timeline, a more compressed price, and you're more susceptible to sequence of return risk. So that was my logic for not paying off my mortgage early. Now, I did say that as part of my investor policy statement, I would pay off my mortgage before going into drawdown, before I'm in a place where I'm only relying on the money that is in my investment accounts or my passive income or my cash flow, before I'm in that place where I'm not relying on income that I'm earning as a employee or entrepreneur or business owner, et cetera, I would pay off my mortgage. And so for me, that looks like not paying extra on my house. What I did do is I refinanced my home, and especially in today's environment, to get the absolute best rate possible. I'm excited to announce to the audience that I locked down a 3.25% 30-year fixed. Standing applause, please. I'm very excited about that. And yeah, it feels like winning. I'm talking about it a lot, dropping that 3.25, 30-year fixed. But then the difference of what I would do, I'm actually just investing in the market. I'm very interested in your feedback here on this as well, Brad. I know it's in a similar, but I like to game things out a little bit more. And what I'm strongly considering doing is inside of my taxable brokerage account, and I've talked many times, the audience will not be surprised, I use M1 Finance for this. Inside my taxable brokerage account, you can actually create pies. You can partition different aspects of your net worth off by a pie. And what I was thinking about doing, and I'm not there yet, but I was thinking about actually partitioning off pieces of my pie to have different goals in mind to represent, here's the money I set aside in lieu of paying off the house. So here's an example of this. You know, I'm also a little bit more aggressive with my emergency fund. So your emergency fund, very short timeline, you might need this at any point. It would be a very conservative pie, right? Your home mortgage, you might need this money in like 15 years. Maybe it is like a moderate conservative pie. And then my long-term investing horizon, that's super aggressive, 100% equities, right? So what if you could kind of partition out my 100% equities path, here's my goals for my home. I need to make sure that at the end of this period of time, like the money's there, I can pay it off. Maybe that's like a not quite as aggressive of a portfolio. I'll have to explore what that would mean later on. And then my emergency fund, all right, I need that to be much, much more conservative. So all of these I can actually set up as individual pies inside of M1 Finance. So I game out my goals inside of my taxable brokerage accounts, but I do not pay off my mortgage early because I'm very excited about my 3.25% fixed. I donate to charitable contributions and I'm trying to grow my, you know, income over time. And your mortgage and your state and property taxes make up the vast majority of what you would be itemizing if you were actually make it that far. So though, for all those reasons and probably some more that I haven't mentioned, I am not paying off my mortgage early, but I am taking all the money that I would be using to pay off that mortgage early and I'm investing that. And Brad, I tell you what, I'm actually really interested in your opinion on this, but before I get that, we'll be right back.
Yeah, this is great. So you're, in essence, by doing that, you're accruing the psychological benefits, right? Because I think when most of us talk about paying off our mortgage, we talk not in terms of math, because we understand that in all likelihood over a 30-year period, it is subpar mathematically and ultimately in your net worth to pay off the mortgage as opposed to investing. But man, those psychological benefits of paying off the mortgage are just, I mean, they're hard to match. And I understand why people do it. But in this case, you're really maybe setting up a best of both worlds scenario, right? Because you're saying, all right, look, mathematically, my 3.25% interest, they are giving me that money for 30 years at 3.25%. Like that is unbelievable. It's almost free money, right? But yet, I know you, Jonathan. I know how you paid off your student loans so quickly. You know, you had $168,000 of student loans you paid off in sub 5 years. So clearly your bias is to pay these off. And I get that. But what you're doing here is you're saying, all right, the additional principal that I would be paying on my mortgage, and instead of just sending it off to the mortgage company and only basically realizing a 3.25% return on this, I'm going to put it into, in your case, M1 Finance, I'm going to even segregate it into one specific section and then I can track it, right? And it's like a horse race then, which is actually kind of cool. Like I think in all likelihood, again, unless something insane zombie apocalypse style happens over the next 30 years, you're going to beat 3.25%. It's almost impossible to imagine a scenario. Clearly, we couldn't have imagined this scenario happening, you know, over these last couple of months. So you can put disbelief, maybe not quite as aside as normal, but it is genuinely hard to imagine over 30 years that you're not going to beat 3.25% and you're going to get to see it. And frankly, for those people and you maybe who want to pay off their mortgage early, you can do that at any time, right? Like the money's sitting there. It's in this account. You see it. It's probably named Jonathan and Danny's early payoff amount. So you psychologically, again, you're getting the benefits of it, but you can realize that at any time. So yeah, I like the idea. I thoroughly approve.
Nice. And so this is actually the interesting part as I get better at this, right? So hear me on this. Everyone hear me on this. I am, Brad is, 100% equities, right? I have no experience with less aggressive portfolios. I'm used to being 100% in on equities and it simplifies my asset allocation. But I just described to you two goals, one, the home, and then two, the emergency fund that I would like to build a much more conservative asset allocation around and keep it partitioned inside of these little pies. And so I'm going to start doing some research based partially on the information that Frank talked about and also get some input from Big Earn and some others on what this pie might actually look like, right? Because you've just moved from this long-term horizon to maybe this medium term and this much more short-term goal of when you might need this money. So for those two pies, what would it look like to build an asset allocation that would serve those goals? You can do that. You can kind of partition out your various asset allocations for different things with a tool like M1 Finance. So anyways, that's the sidebar. I don't have the answer for you today. It's a work in progress, but I have a feeling it'll be fodder for another maybe casual Wednesday, Brad.
Yeah. No, I like it. And I have to say, thank you very much for the idea to refinance. Previously, I found it somewhat unpalatable because it's, I don't know, just getting all the documents together. It just seemed like a big hassle. But man, I dropped my rate over a point. I think it was 1.25%. and I'm saving, I think it's $295 a month, which is absolutely absurd.
I love that.
So, I mean, that is just free money in reduced interest every single month for the life of my loan. So yeah, Jonathan, thanks for, you know, just like we try to do here at Choose a Vibe for the audience and the community, thank you for compelling me to take action. I think this was a big win for my family.
Well, you know, like the median home price in America this year was just a little bit over $250,000. Those are the numbers that were reported just right around December 2019. You know, if you were to save 1.25%, it's around $3,000 a year in savings just on the interest calculation. So, I mean, this is real dollars. And when you take a look, like the silver lining here, with everything that the Fed did to kind of inject a stimulus into the economy to prop up the economy a little bit in this really tough time that we're all going through, one of the tools that they have at their disposal is lowering interest rates. And there's a spillover effect into the private lending departments, the private lending, all of those rates are based on those federal rates as well. And so right now, literally right now, 2020, spring of 2020, probably for the next 3 to 5 months as the economy is kind of grappling with what's going on, rates are at historic lows. So if you purchased a home within the last 2 years and you have not yet looked into your refinance options, there is significant money to be saved. Don't just settle for one quote. And actually, we have an episode that we did recently and all the different things that you should consider when looking into a refinance. We'll have that linked in the show notes as well. But there's a way for you to save hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month. Even if you have a house at that median threshold, hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month, this is one of those things you should take action on and you'll benefit for the next 30 years. 30 years.
Well, the next item from our mailbag actually comes from the Facebook group. So Christine, who is on episode 137 with us in Nashville, she posted that she was able to get some great savings on her auto insurance right now. So one of the things that she was able to do was to put one of her cars on hold for her insurance. So she and her husband are working from home. There's two of them. There's two cars, but maybe if they're going out, they only need one car. So they were able to call Allstate and save on that. Now, there was a lot of really great discussion back and forth on this thread related to just general car insurance savings right now. I know several companies have been issuing partial refunds or just 20% back just to be able to help people through this time, because I'm guessing claims are probably down because people aren't on the road as much. So thankfully, they're giving that back to people to help out. So I, reading this, of course, put on my old dusty insurance agent hat. So I was really excited to see this because this is an option that doesn't get discussed a lot. And I will say, if this is something that you think could work for you, contact your insurance agent, because your policy, based on your situation, your state, your company, will vary. But a little known thing that you can do is put your car insurance on hold. Now, what this initially was designed for is, say you're in the US military, you are single, you have your car, and you're about to deploy for 6 months, a year, 18 months. Car is going to be driven to mom or dad's or brother or sister's, and it's going to sit in their garage for a year. You don't want to pay insurance on a car that nobody's driving. So you can put it on hold. So you as a driver are still insured. So maybe when you come back for leave, you can still rent a car and drive it, but you're not going to actually have access to your vehicle and your car. It's just going to sit there. They also do this for snowbirds, the migratory birds of Florida here, where some people live half the year in colder states in the summer. Then they live half the year in warmer states, usually when they're retired. And sometimes they just leave maybe a not as nice car behind in Florida when they're not here, because they know they need to get around. They just don't want to drive it back and forth across the country. So for 6 months, they can put it on hold. So it exists, it's living in its garage, but it's not going anywhere. Nobody's using it. That's what this was initially designed for, is for, you know, you're not touching that car for a long time. Extreme situations. We're kind of in an extreme situation. So if you currently are saying, I have not driven my car, I haven't even turned it on for 40 days, with this caveat, you can turn the car on in your parking spot in your garage, just run the engine, turn it off. But other than that, you can't drive it. So you're saying that you are not driving this car at all right now. So this, I would say, would be ideal for two car households. Like if you only have one vehicle in your household, this isn't going to work for you, because these insurance companies usually require at least a month of you not driving it to be able to ask for this option. This isn't just, I don't have anything going on this weekend, I'll just put my car insurance on hold. This is like truly a long-term option. so you would be able to call and ask for it to be put on hold. Now, the car is where the insurance is on hold. You as the driver are still insured. So in this case, Jason and I have done this. We have two vehicles. We put one on hold. So both of us as drivers are still insured. Our second vehicle is still insured. So either of us could drive that second vehicle in case of an emergency to go get groceries, whatever. But the other vehicle, we just don't need. We're both working from home right now. Like, we don't need to have that going. And that's going to save us on our auto insurance bill. But again, if you just have that one car household, that may not be feasible for you. If you have a lease on your car, if you have a loan on your car, this may not be feasible for you. So this is a good time to call your insurance company and ask if this is an option that could work for you. You as a driver will still be insured. I always want to reiterate that, because some people in the thread were saying, no, I can't have a lapse in coverage. You're right. As a driver, you do not want a lapse in coverage, but all you're doing is saying your car is not being driven. You could still borrow like your mom's car. You could borrow a friend's car and still drive. You will still be insured as a driver. It is just that your car will not be. And so that's one of the caveats to know about that. So this is an opportunity to save some money if you think you're not going to drive your car at all in the next 30 days. So check that out.
MK, some amazing advice in there, not least of which is please turn on your car every couple of days. Like yes. You said, just please let it just run in the, don't let it sit for 40 days. I promise you it's not going to turn back on. So yeah, I think another great piece of advice is just give your insurance company a call, right? We talk about this all the time, like taking action. There might be a program that you're unaware of with your particular company. I know the company that I have my car insurance with is Geico currently. And I know they have this new thing they're calling the Geico Give Back. You actually don't have to call. You don't have to do anything. They're choosing to credit their customers with 15% of their next full policy term, which is amazing. You know, they realize that clearly, people are driving less. So that's just a cool thing. But I think most people are going to have to call their insurance company. And this might be in time, like we always talk about, get a quote, get another quote from a company. Like, think outside the box. I know we talked about this previously, but there's a company called Metromile that you can pay car insurance per mile driven. I think I've driven Golden Boy, my car, maybe fewer than 10 miles in the last 40 days. Like, I suspect Metromile wouldn't be a bad option right now. So this is a time for creativity. So at the very, very, very least, give your car insurance company a call. It really probably would take just a handful of minutes, and you never know what options they have for you.
And I think the other half here is just question the unquestionable, like the what-if scenarios. For instance, you just realized that for the last 40 days, if you're a two-car family, like both your cars are giant paperweights, one seems like a bit much, two seems ridiculous. I'm in this group, so I tell you, I'm really thinking this. But if you've suddenly gotten there, you're one of these individuals that were always going to have two cars. Now you haven't used either of them for the last 40 days. And you're like, wow, if I just went back to one, that actually seems like a lot. At the same place, you're also questioning how much you've spent on your cars cumulatively and recently. You know, if you have spent $30,000 on a car, that means that you have locked in $6,000 a year minimum for the next 5 years into your cost of living. Like, that's your new baseline. Your new baseline per year before you talk about anything else is $6,000 a year. You add in your car taxes, you add in your insurance, you get a little bit higher. So while many of you are not going to go to zero cars, like, what would it look like if you did go down to one car? And just think, well, it'd be too expensive. I'd have to pay every single time I needed an Uber and a Lyft. Your baseline was $6,000 a year. Like, that's what we just talked about. That was your baseline prior. And what if you didn't have that? Could you afford, you know, maybe $1,000 in Uber charges over the remaining year? I mean, how does it, if you think about what does society look like as we come out of this, do we really need two cars? Conversely, if you're in the market for a new car, do you really need to spend $30,000 on a car when people can't give them away right now? Right? Like, they can't sell them. They can't give them away. Like, what a buying opportunity if you're in the market for a car. In fact, I was thinking back, it was episode 167. We spoke with Rob and Rishon, and one of the things at the end, she dropped this knowledge bomb on us, like how she goes about getting the ridiculous deals on cars. So she identifies the make, the model, the year of what she wants. And then she sends like this, Brad, if you think about it, you know, that HVAC letter that you were always contemplating sending, she actually does it. She sends it to dealers in the area. I got her to send us a copy of it and put it on the show notes for this episode. But just to kind of give you an idea of what you might do, This is from her, quote, "When I'm shopping for a vehicle of any kind, I send the email below to at least 10 dealers within the area. I've had the best luck with small dealerships. It's fairly simple, but it works." Wow, simple works better. Even amazing. "Hello, dealer of choice, insert name here. I'm in the market for a new vehicle. I have a down payment and an excellent credit score. I am seeking the following: 2017 or later, Nissan, Honda, or Toyota, four-door sedan, less than 60,000 miles, no black or white interior or exterior, $11,000, including tax, title, and license. Do you have anything that would match this?" Now, this is a template, right? You've identified the dealers that you're going to send this out to. You have the criteria of what you would consider acceptable. Let someone else take the depreciation hit. You know, who are those suckers that purchased a car right before all of this went down? And then there's you. Scooping up the remains at pennies on the dollar. This could be you, this template. It's on episode 167. Go to chooseify.com/167. Just copy that. Give it a shot. I'd be shocked if you didn't save literally thousands and thousands of dollars. You know, the car that you drive will not make or break you. You know, you gotta look the part to be the part. But the car that you drive and how much you spend on the car will have a very real outcome on how quickly you reach your number. And for the exact opposite reason that you think, you know, when you haven't built a baseline of $6,000 a year into your budget because you're affording the payments on the new car, you are able to take that same interval of time, that 5-year window, and make massive progress on your path to your number.
All right, MK, we had a couple of amazing voicemails come through. I'd love for you to set them up right now.
Absolutely. So we had a great email come in from Allie, who is one of our regular listeners, who is an expat currently living in China. And as you can imagine, she has been dealing with true quarantine much longer than we have been, and has some great perspective that she can offer us as far as what her and her family have learned and experienced. So she called in with a great voicemail summarizing what they've learned. And I think we're all going to get a lot from that.
Hi, Brad, Jonathan, MK, and the Choose FI community. My husband, Ron, and I have been loving the daily shows. Way to pivot and really respond to the needs of the community. I'm calling in today with a bit of our FI social distancing story. We live in Shenzhen, China, which is in the province that was the second hardest hit by COVID-19. And we've been social distancing since January 24th. So wow, Ron works time. As the head of marketing at an international school here. We have four little girls aged 9, 7, 4, and 4. And when our school went on Chinese New Year holiday in late January, you know, we had no idea what was ahead. Honestly, the first few weeks were fun. Home learning was really novel. It kind of felt like vacation. And then around weeks like 3 and 4, the vacation wore off. Real life settled in, and Ron and I, we really had to look at what we wanted life to look like over the next few weeks and months and make adjustments to how we were spending our time and our resources. You know, Ron and I are early on in our FI journey. We paid off the last of our consumer debt in January. We've paid off about $35,000 in school loans, and we rent for about $1,400 a month, and we don't have any car payments because we don't have a car. You don't need one here. We use public transportation. And we've now saved about $11,000 into our $24,000 nest egg. And we plan to have the rest done by July.
That's
a bit of our background on our family and our FI situation. And I know a lot of the Choose FI community is really struggling right now. And so I wanted to share some of our insights related to FI and just some related to life during these unprecedented times, in hopes to bring a bit of positivity, joy, and maybe some strategy to the community. So the first piece here is that our spending has decreased greatly, which is fabulous. You know, we're not traveling, entertaining friends, going out for meals, going to the movies, any of those extras. So in March, we were able to save an extra $750, which was a massively unexpected blessing. And we were able to put that towards our emergency fund. We've also been able to pare down our food budget to about $1.50 per person, per meal, per day.
Brad, she's
now,
one of them.
My husband is a ninja when it comes to grocery shopping. So in China, we have to do our grocery shopping every day. The fridge is too small to keep produce. And honestly, produce doesn't really last very long here. So Ron goes out every morning to the local open market to do the shopping. And he's built up quite the reputation with the guys for buying up all of the slightly rotted fruit at a massive discount. And then we make smoothies out of them. He even got a 65% discount off of 20 pounds of oranges yesterday. Yes, 20 pounds. Now, we have
C,
a big family, right? And it was a win-win because the guy had overstock and he couldn't display them. Now, luckily for us, Ron has taken to heart the idea that everything is negotiable. And I imagine during this time, no matter where you are around the world, you know, you could do a fair bit of fair negotiation for your purchases too. Now, in terms of cramped spaces, you know, our apartment is about 1,200 square feet. We live on the fifth floor of a high rise, and we needed to carve out a bit of workspace in our bedroom. And so I came home one day to a lovely, albeit used looking desk in the room. And Ron wouldn't tell me where he got it. And so that means, my friends, that it came from the trash pile, which I have confirmed that to be a fact, by the way. And before FI, I'm not sure I would have let that fly, if I'm honest, but FI goals trump all. We have a hashtag going in our house. So during this time, we can all be a little creative and loosen our expectations of an ideal reality now and go with the flow. We've also been able to cut our electricity bill by a whopping 75% by simply buying a couple of $10 fans and just refusing to run the AC. We've been hanging more laundry on our balcony, again, as we live in the high rise, instead of running the dryer, right? So we can see where you can see where you can skimp on utilities, even though you're likely in the house way more than usual. It just takes a bit of intention. And then relationship-wise, I am so grateful for this community. We've actually found a Choose FI community based out of Shanghai, which we've been connecting with. And for Ron and I, solidarity and choosing FI is really keeping us sane and on the same page, which is another huge gift. So together, we've listened to more podcast episodes, read more finance books, you know, done more tracking, planning, dreaming during these 60-some-odd days than ever before. And it's really giving us hope and keeping us on track. So stay connected. Make sure you're doing things together as a couple and as a family that are important to you so that you don't feel isolated and lonely even in your own space. Ron and I also get to take the dog for a walk each afternoon, and it's our connection time and just some brain space to think and to dream together. And so just today, we were talking about cutting down our food budget a little bit more. Maybe we can get to like a buck and a quarter per person per meal. You know, doing a little bit more rice and beans, if you will, to kind of buffet us in maybe a bit of anticipation for the unknowns that lay ahead. But it's really a massive blessing to be putting some constructive brain power into knowing which levers we can pull in this season of our FI journey. And then the last little bit here for things that we've done, we eat whole food plant-based, also gluten-free and dairy-free. And this lifestyle has saved us loads of money. For us, it was medically necessary for some of the things that we have going on in our family. But, you know, dairy and meat in China is wildly expensive, and fruit and veggies are super reasonable and plentiful. So maybe for you, you too can look at switching up your typical meal plans to save money that way. I mean, in the reality is everything else is shaken up a bit. So why not? You can also look at further cost savings in areas that maybe weren't possible before, right? And so you can take extra thought to this now and put it all aside in case something does happen with your income in the near future. Communication is super important. You want to be in constant communication with your partner on what you need, and sharing ideas on how to maximize your routines, finances, you know, throughout the day as you learn how to fine tune your new normal, and then stay flexible, right? So what worked today might not work tomorrow. So we can be open to changing with the needs as they shift. Keep exercising, eating clean, supplementing, getting sleep. You know, all of those are really non-negotiables in our house for our mental and physical well-being. And if you have homeschooling kids right now, I loved that show, the Accidental Homeschoolers show that you guys did. It really was really releasing for us in terms of some of the stress we was experiencing. So just don't stress too much if your kids are small like ours. You know, they're going to catch up. And we decided long ago that it was not worth the strain on our relationship. If you're feeling that your relationship with your kids is strained because of this, like, it's just not worth it if it's adding stress to your home. So we've shifted our focus onto the more positive habits of perseverance and planning and risk-taking as they adjust to something new as well. You know, we're all adjusting together. It has helped us to remember that we are all writing a story during this time. So what story are you writing? In a year, 2 years, 5 years, when you look back on this time, what is the story that you want to be able to tell? What did you start during this time? What did you stop? Who did you help? How did you make a difference? What did you learn? How did you grow? What did you overcome? What did you intentionally role model to your kids? You know, there's so many questions that you can look at to keep you on track daily to ensure that you're making the most of each and every one of your days. So you can choose a couple of questions like that that resonate with you, and then you can keep them out in front of you like a compass to keep you on track. So to you, Jonathan, Brad, and the whole team at Choose FI, thank you. You know, a massive thank you from the bottom of our hearts. You know, choosing FI for our family has been the most impactful thing that we've ever done for our future. And the best part is that we're just getting started. There's so much greatness ahead. And there's so much ahead for each and every one of you out there as well. So thank you for the work that you do at Choose FI. It truly is life-changing.
Brad, I think Allie just came on our show and just mic drop closed it down. That's amazing.
Yeah. I jotted down, that was a masterclass on FI and life optimization, like a 10-minute masterclass, right? I mean, think about how many themes from our first 3 years were in there. I mean, the Allie will provide, right? And she said, FI goals trump all. And that's interesting, right? It's like thinking about life holistically, right? Not in terms of just one situation by one, or thinking about it in terms of deprivation, but thinking it holistically of like, this is our plan. You know, this is our FI goal, and we're going to figure out what works for us to get there. Everything is negotiable, right? There were multiple areas of that. The $1.50 per person per meal, which certainly beats my $2, my pathetic now $2 per person per meal. I mean, there was just a lot, but I mean, for me, what story are you writing? Man, if that didn't bring you chills, I don't know. I don't know what will. I thought that was a brilliant way to look at this, right? Because clearly none of us would have picked this for the last month of our lives and maybe the next month or thereabout, a couple months, but you always have a choice, right? You always have a choice of what story are you writing about this situation, about your life, about your relationships with your family, about anything. And that is really, I think that's going to stick with me for a long time. What story are you writing?
Well, if we didn't have enough positivity, Jared also called in with wins on wins on wins. So if you needed optimism, we've got it for you.
There you go. Choose a FI mailbag. Injecting a little optimism into your weekend. Let's roll the dice.
Hey guys, this is Jared. And I just wanted to call in and say thank you, thank you, thank you. I just left a review on Stitcher, but I couldn't adequately type out in words the emotions and the gratitude that I have for you guys, your team, and this whole community. And I know we're in rather dark times right now with so many uncertainties going on in the world. But I just want everyone to know that hope is not lost and the FIRE movement is not over. And there's no reason to stop pursuing the best version of yourself. If anything, everyone should be pursuing the best version of themselves during this time. My older brother introduced me to Choose a FI about 9 months ago with episode 33, Design Your Future with Dominic Cortuccio. And he said I'd enjoyed the episode and that the whole podcast was pretty cool. But I immediately started back over with episode one. And I am now hundreds of episodes in. And I'm not going to lie, at first, I was really confused. I think it took maybe 5 or 6 episodes before one of you finally described what VTSAX was and what it stood for and what that meant. But after that, things clicked. I stuck with the podcast and I've now learned more than I ever could have imagined about personal finances, self-discipline, myself, how to have difficult conversations, and just how to live an optimized, happy life. I want to share some of the small successes I've made over these 9 months and my frugal win of my life. So I'm 24. And graduate from the Air Force Academy here in a couple weeks. And the Air Force is actually going to send me to get a master's degree in Latin American studies at UC San Diego in the fall. So I will have had a free undergrad and a free graduate school degree paid for by the military while getting paid to go to school the entire time.
Yeah, that's crushing it. Nice job, man. Wow.
And I'm super stoked to join San Diego's local group as it's one of the biggest in the country. After grad school, my wife and I will be moving to Ramstein, Germany to work in aircraft maintenance. And then I will likely come back to teach languages here at the Air Force Academy for a few years. I love serving my country, but I don't want to stay in for 20 years. So our goal is to be financially independent by the time my commitment ends in 8 years. So I'll be 32. Since listening to the Choose a FI podcast, I can now listen to podcasts in the gym on 2x speed. Sometimes if I'm super focused, 3x speed, which means I get about 5 to 8 episodes in a day. And I've also read more books than I've ever read in my whole life. And they've all been either gifts or from our school's library. So they've all been for free.
Friends of the library.
Big purchase items. I put them on a 72-hour list like you guys have suggested. And it has really helped me eliminate impulse purchases. I also have been using a USAA credit card for about a year to practice good money habits. Had a really low credit limit. It was a pretty safe way to start. But today I just got approved for the Chase Sapphire Reserve. So it'll be coming in the mail in a couple of weeks. And I finally entered the big leagues. They waive their annual fee for military members, but I've been holding off on applying because I don't spend a lot of money because our stipend here at the Academy isn't very big. So I normally wouldn't reach my spending minimum. I practice patience. And now that I'm commissioning as an officer and moving back home for the summer before school starts in September, I'll finally reach my expense minimum over the next 3 months. But not because I'm spending more money, but just because I waited for the right time to optimize my expenses that I was already going to make. And then my frugal win of the year, my fiance, she is the frugal win of the year. It took me a while to get the courage to talk to her about FI, but once I did, I realized she's actually far more FI-minded than I am. She wants a small wedding. When we talked about rings, she also only wants a cubic zirconium ring that she would actually be angry if I spent more money on than I should, because once we do get married, she just wants to wear matching gold wedding bands. She donated plasma to pay for most of her tuition in college. Our goal is to save as much as we can, become lifelong learners, and spend the good years of our lives serving missions for our church all over the world, raising our children with a service-oriented mindset while teaching them the importance of financial independence and being intentional about life. You guys are definitely my top five people I spend most of my time with, even though I've never actually met you because of how much I listen to your guys' content. And I hope that someday I get to meet you guys after this whole COVID thing has passed so I can just give you guys the biggest, fattest hug ever for what you've done for me and my future family. So again, thank you, thank you, thank you, and keep up the good work.
That's amazing. And there is no doubt in my mind, like no doubt, zero doubt, that you're going to be FI in 8 years. You're going to reach financial independence within 8 years. And I do not say that lightly. Wow, Brad. Wow.
Yeah, that, wow. That's two maybe best of ever voicemails right back to back. That, Jared, to you and your fiance, that I just wish you a wonderful, wonderful life. And it sounds like you're well on your way. So yeah, thank you for the voicemail.
So this is actually really funny. I know that over the last 4 years, we've released a lot of episodes. You know, I think when we started, we had this thought that we were going to only have like, Brad, do you remember? Like, I remember, Brad, we'll just do like 20-minute episodes. Like when we first started back in 2017 and we did like two or three of them, our first 2 to 3 episodes were in that 20-minute range. And then they were about an hour from there. And then, and frankly, we kind of just stayed the course. We were at this 2 times a week cadence. We stayed the course and then COVID hit and we pivoted, realizing we wanted to do more timely shows 5 days a week. And the compromise was going to be, all right, we're going to do shows 5 days a week to make sure we're getting the information out there quickly. But we're going to go back to a shorter format, somehow forgetting that we had already tried this. And so the shorter format again was going to be, you know, 20, 25 minutes, somewhere in that range daily. You remember that? You remember that discussion?
Yep. Came and went pretty quickly.
So here we are pushing out 5 episodes a week, all of them approaching an hour long. And I saw this review on iTunes just the other day. And the review is says, "You guys have got to stop." I'm gonna read a portion of it. It's pretty funny. I just got introduced.
It was a 5-star review, so it was nice, right?
Yes, it was a 5-star review. I just got introduced to Choose FI 2 months ago. I travel a ton for work, or at least I did until obviously now. And I thought I'd have plenty of time to listen to all your podcasts with a pretty short time frame. Then you started doing podcasts daily. You're killing me. It's been great, though. I've listened to the first 24 episodes and a few of the ones you've done recently. You know, I wish I'd gotten started sooner and some additional information. Keep up the good work. There's a lot more stuff in there. But I wanted to say, we hear you. We hear you. We are going to stop 5 days a week. Having said that, Brad, I think the identity of what we want to do, it's looking back over the last 3 to 4 years and realizing, like, where does this show fit into the universe? What is the role? What is the need? How are we serving the community with this podcast? And I think it's threefold, which kind of maps out to what I'm about to say next. One is to deep dive into topics that are far outside of our community's experience and frankly, our experience, right? To bring on experts, people that understand a topic far better than we do, that can help us as we build, as we design our future. And just roll into that. Most of the time, probably 80%+ of the time, it's financial related, right? It's an aspect of money. But we don't limit ourselves to that. When we're talking about designing our future, we look at it holistically. What does it look like to design, you know, a great future for yourself and your family? And so that's why we talk about life optimization generally. Now, that's one. That's kind of, in my mind, that's what the role that Monday fills. Two, and this is what our Friday, in the past, our Friday episodes were doing this for us. Two was, let's just slow down. We just learned something. You've had a chance to think about it. Like, what are the parameters of that? Now that you've had a chance to take that information and soak it in, How would you apply that to your own life? Information is great, but only if you take action on it. What does it look like when you flex this new information and you see how it works for you? What did you miss? What is the feedback from the audience? How would you iterate that with the benefit of hindsight? Don't be limited to your hot take, but rather, how does the information age in? Our Friday did that, but then there was a third goal that also got meshed with it as well, and that was deliberately, what did we miss? What questions do you have? What could we have done a better job answering? How can we apply the nuance of these really big ideas, these big topics? How can we apply that to your specific situation? So over the last 3 years, those three ideas were kind of meshed into two episodes a week. But now, as we kind of go into this new format, three shows a week, we're going to give each one of those identities, each one of those purposes, their own place in the universe. Monday for exploring a topic. Wednesday, a more casual take on something. We'll go back and we'll take a look at that topic or a topic from the past. We'll bring something out of the archives and we will just iterate that with new information that we have. We'll tell you how we're applying it personally. We'll bring on a different perspective, but we will use Wednesday in a much more casual setting to refresh ideas that we believe are important and are timeless. And then Friday, most importantly, the heartbeat of the show has always been community. It'll be mailbag. It'll be your voicemails with your feedback and your questions. And I think, Brad, that feels like that's going to be the right place to stand as we go into this, you know, next arc of the show.
Yeah, agreed. I like the new concept. I like how you laid it out. And yeah, that is always how we thought about the show. But yeah, we tried to shoehorn it into two episodes. And I think that's ultimately what comes out of, you know, we increase the cadence during that period of need to five times a week. And I think we've realized three sounds like a better number for us, I think, moving forward. And I think hopefully it'll provide a lot more value to the community.
Now, one final note as we're speaking about the community. Before COVID-19 and everything that's going on in this world and social distancing and all that stuff, we had announced that we really wanted to see a Choose If I Day. I think one of the themes that you saw in these last two voicemails is the desire for community, the desire for being a part of a local group. And I certainly think that you should be. Go to chooseify.com/local. See if there is a group in your area. There's well over 300 groups all around the world. San Diego and China were represented today. So, you know, see if that applies to you as well. I think you'll be surprised, pleasantly surprised. Having said that, we are planning on doing a physical meetup day, a meetups all around the country where people could find, you know, on this one common day, which was going to be in May. We would try to facilitate that and encourage people to do it on one day, just kind of as a way of saying, you know, here we are and we're better together. Now, in light of what's going on around the world, even as I think to some degree things are settling down a little bit, we have no clear guidance on when we're going to be given an all clear and when really around the country and around the world, it will be fine to do, you know, meetups of any size. We just don't know when that date is. And so with an abundance of caution, we are going to postpone Choose If I Day, which I believe was May 9th. We are postponing that. And what I'd like to do, I don't want to lose this, but rather I want to say, let's postpone it till we can really celebrate this, right? Let's be on the right side of guidelines from the CDC and let's wait till we can truly celebrate this. And then let's enjoy that because so many of us have gone to extreme measures with social distancing. And even as we start to potentially lighten up in various places, we're probably not going to be going en masse to large events and conferences right now, but at some point we will. And when that point is there, when that we'll announce it and we will make this day happen and it will be amazing. And I think it'll really mean something, but we're not going to rush it and try and fit it in here just because in January or December, we thought May 9th sounded great. So postpone till further notice. And Brad, we'll update everyone when that changes.
Yeah, agreed. And yeah, like you said previously, you know, when facts on the ground change, you obviously change direction. And yeah, it made no sense to have Choose If I Day in May. But yeah, I love the concept of a celebration. And what we've done and what a lot of our local groups have done is take these meetings online, right? I know a number of our local groups are having Zoom calls just as their regular monthly meetups. And I've been a part of a couple of them already, San Diego and Grand Rapids. I'm going to attend one with Choose If I Stanford, California this coming weekend. And we've been doing a lot of Facebook Live events as well. And I wanted to talk about this because Facebook does a lot of things really well, but they do a pretty terrible job from what I've seen of alerting you to when there are Facebook Lives or how to find them. So we're going to set up a page at chooseify.com/live. And we're going to list all of our upcoming Facebook Lives, as well as send links to the videos for all the prior ones.
So we're setting up that page, chooseify.com/live. It is a list full of links to all of the episodes, the lives that you have already done with these topics included. It will also contain a projected calendar for all of the anticipated or upcoming lives and topics that will actually be covered. Facebook doesn't make it super easy to share links outside of the Facebook platform for lives. They don't exist. So the links until it goes live will just point you directly towards the Facebook page. So you can bypass this whole process by just liking and subscribing basically to the Facebook page. Or if you know what's coming up, but you don't know what the link is, just go to chooseify.com/live. And at the anticipated time, there will be a link available that you'll be able to click on to go watch the event right there. So that's the two ways that we plan on managing this. And really, we just want you to know, one, that these lives are happening, two, where you can watch them in post. And then three, probably most importantly, because these lives are really for you, especially if you have a question you want answered in lieu of one of the topics being discussed, how you can participate. chooseify.com/live will be established to make that super easy. All right, Brad, how'd we do? Is this a 20-minute episode like we were planning? No?
Yeah, I don't think we're constitutionally capable of doing a 20-minute episode, but I think it was a very enjoyable episode. So I love those voicemails, and yeah, it's always good to be with you guys.
Awesome. All right, please, for the mailbag episodes, we'll keep soliciting it, but send us your questions, feedback@chooseify.com, and if you want your question answered via voicemail, again, very easy. Just go to chooseify.com/voicemail. We'll be dedicating an entire show to your questions via email or voicemail. All right, my friends, stay tuned, stay subscribed. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.